Welcome back again. This is the Fitness Reborn podcast. My name is Sean, your very gracious, illustrious host. And I have, for the first time ever, I have not one, but two guests on my program this morning. I have Tim Blessed, who is a hip-hop artist, an activist, and the author of the book that we're going to talk about here in a little bit. And I also have Michael LaRiccia, graphic artist and illustrator and all-around very good artist. I saw some of his work and the research that I was doing here. It's very well done. They come from Dark Horse Comics Publisher, which I just learned is responsible for a lot of the stuff that you probably already know, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and The Mask with Jim Carrey. Didn't know it was a comic. I didn't know that right now. I knew it was a movie. I saw it. I did not know it was a comic. So that just shows you how much about comics I really know. But their work is the graphic art, graphic novel Planeta Blue, Rise of Goo. And we're going to talk about their book. We're going to talk about what it pertains to people, how it pertains to you, how it pertains to me, and what we can possibly learn from it. So, gentlemen, thank you so much for showing up.
Yeah, thank you for having us. A pleasure.
Yeah, this is really cool. This is really cool. I feel really, really kind of inspired right now. I got two people on. Maybe I'll have like Zoom calls interviews with like my show from now on. All right. Well, let's start with the meat of everything here, with the work that you guys have done. This is what brought you to the show in the first place here. So let's talk about the book. So now I got two of you here, so I'll probably have to call out one or the other for questions here, and we'll just kind of get to it that way. So, Tim, I know you're the author of this book.
Yeah.
So let's start with you. Okay. Where'd this book come from? How did we go from hip hop artists to now making a comic book?
Yeah. Oh man. Thanks for the question. Thanks for having us. Yeah, man. It's, you know, music for me is about storytelling. It's, always whenever I approach any song, it's, how do I tell the story? What's the story about in the song? And so having children, I also would tell bedtime stories. And, one of these stories, which ended up being Planeta Blue, kind of went beyond the bedtime story and actually went into the daylight hours and really were resonating with my sons and eventually my daughter because it took 5 years to write. It was just one of those stories that wouldn't leave me. As much as I wanted to just keep making music, the story was like, it needs to come to life. It needs to see the light of day. And so I decided just to embark on this journey and start writing it. And, you know, halfway through, I really had to a lot of fun whenever I was able to just isolate myself and say, let me just sit down and write this. I would just close my eyes and the story would just come to me. And I think, you know, anyone who's an artist knows how that is when you're in the flow of things and things just are coming natural. So it would come really natural whenever I would just isolate myself and push things aside. And eventually, you know, I got through to all the way to the other side, to the end of the story. And it was really an amazing journey. It took 5 years to write. And then I always knew, because I came to literature and reading through comic books was my entry point. I didn't like reading. If it wasn't for comic books, I probably wouldn't read anything other than what the teacher was assigning. And so I knew that this book had to be a comic book, even though I had an offer from a publisher to do it in long form, like just a written thing. And so I was like, no, I got to make this into a graphic novel, to a comic. And so a mutual friend of ours and Mike's neighbor actually told me about Mike. And, you know, I went to his website and I was just blown away by his art. And then we met up and Mike just was a outstanding gentleman, just an outstanding human being, man. And that's important for me, because I work with bands, I work with musicians. As we know, there's so many talented people, but not all of them are cool people or grounded, right, or, you know, really have principles and core values that align with mine. And so when I met Mike, he was about that. And once we started chatting and we started moving in that direction, it just clicked. And so it was really exciting to see these words come to life in Mike's amazing illustrations.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at some of the work on the website too. Like, this kind of speaks to two different sides. Like I was telling Michael before we started broadcasting here, like we're talking about how I keep like a very wide scope here in terms on the show here. We don't just talk about the fitness, we talk about the wellness. We talk about the things that actually contribute to people's wellness, like arts. We know are huge in that regard. I like art a lot, and I like literature. So I get what you're saying, like that. Like, you know, I like reading, but I was slow to really come to like reading. It wasn't really until I was in my 20s I really started to really enjoy reading. Here, we went through all that stuff where, you know, in school, where it's like, here, the teacher says read this, you'll like it. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. And if you don't, it really kind of sours your experience of reading. And you're just kind of like, ugh. So, and art, like, I'm not much of an artist myself here, but my mother is an artist. She's a graphic artist. So I appreciate that end of things as well, too. So I really get where you're coming from when you say, like, you know, in long form written out, it'd be great, but it'd be better if it actually had some visuals behind it. You know what I mean?
Totally. And I think what's good to make the connection with your audience is we're like wellness and fitness guys. Like we're always in the gym, you know, and Mike knows, you know, we joke around about, you know, getting him ready for the Christmas picture, you know, with no shirt on, him and his family with no shirt on.
but we would know have that, my shirt on.
Yes. Yeah, that's your cue, Mike. Rip it off like Hulk.
Yeah,
like
Hulk. Let's do it. Let's see the guns.
but really, it's about energy, right? It's always about getting to that good energy. And for us, you know, being grounded, whether it's mindfulness, whether it's actual physical fitness, to me, taps into being able to tap into what I call the source, which is really just this creative energy that allows us to create the best possible product, if you will, in story. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, it's really about the story. And we think we have a really unique story, something that hasn't been told before and you know, packaged in a beautiful way.
So Michael, when you got approached by Tim, okay, so he got the lead in on you from a neighbor.
My neighbor, said, my only neighbor.
Your neighbor, Tim got at least was made aware of your existence and what you do, and he came to you and say, "Hey, I got this really bomb idea here for a comic. I got the story all laid out. It's been in my head for 5 years. It needs a visual representation." Mm-hmm. So when he came to you with that idea in mind, were you all like, "Yeah, let's do it," or was it more like, "Well, you know, let's see what we can do with that"? You know,
I mean, that's it. So the short answer is yes. But, you know, when he came, so I met with him as sort of not as a favor to my neighbor, but to be polite. Oh, you have a friend who has a book? I'll meet with him. You know, that kind of thing. Not knowing. You know, because we both joke around where it's like, you know, everybody says that, oh, I wrote something or I'm an artist, you know, so you don't really know what you're about to get into. But when we met, you know, it was really clear that, you know, the book had a lot of merit to it. It was exciting. He was very serious about it. The only hesitation I had was it was such a big project. Because the book itself that he wrote was over 100 pages. And, wow. You know, this was a new thing for him being, you know, creating a graphic novel. And for me, I have done books. It's just they were smaller and they were, you know, I self-published them and things like that. So I saw how big of a project this was going to be. And that's what eventually ended up us doing a crowdfunding project, which was for Kickstarter. So we actually funded it successfully on our own. And then we pitched it to Dark Horse Comics, who is now publishing it now. So yeah, I was sort of, you know, I'm always a little you know, I was cautiously optimistic
right.
that it would be a good project. But, you know, once we really got into the meat of it, we had such a good time working together. And there was just such good energy, and it moved along at a great pace. So so it worked out very well.
Do you normally or very often get approached by people? Do you have like people coming to you like with all sorts of ideas, get one to hire out?
Yeah, no, I mean, fortunately, I'm at a point now in my career where I say no to people now. But before it was sort of like, oh, I have a children's book I want to write, or it's or, you know, I have, it's really like a lot of books that come up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at this point, I don't have to take everything that comes, that's offered to me. But you do run into the problem where people are new at it and they don't understand the process, and it can really drag out for a long time. And, you know, financially, there's challenges. So, you know, I try to stick more with people who are really serious about what they're doing and have a clear path on what they're looking for, you know.
Well, Tim, you know, if the fact that you sat down and took the time to write out 100 pages of something, that probably does probably suggest that you were probably yeah. pretty damn serious about this, right?
Oh yeah, totally, man. I think it's so important. I work with young people. I work with youth, and that's the story is for the youth. It's a YA, young adult, a story, and the main characters are teenagers. And you know, I always like to just let people know that it's always about commitment. You know, it's like going to the gym, right? You're either gonna go or not, right? You can't like maybe not, because you don't, right? So at some point, I just had to commit to it and just say, this is gonna get done. I'm not just gonna be someone that talks about it. We know what that road leads down if you just talk about it, but. When I did talk about it, people were excited. That's what was cool about it. It was like when I would share maybe some of the chapters beforehand, people were excited about it. And so that gave me that fuel to say, hey, you know, I want to finish this. It's just like, you know, when we go to the gym once again and you see a little bit of those gains, right? You're like, wow, I got like 5 chapters. I got 10 chapters. Like, hey, the story is moving. I could see, you know, the pecs are coming in really nice, you know, like I'm gonna keep going because I can see that there's light at the end of this. And so, you know, I was glad that Mike saw it, because that was a worry for me, to be honest with you, because I knew it was a big book. I did approach other artists. Some of them were painters, to be honest. And they were just like, this is so massive, man. I don't know. One was a children's book called I and I, which is really cool. My son's named I and I also. And so he was like, this is massive, man. I cannot commit to this. And so when I approached Mike, I was, you know, optimistic, but knew that he possibly could just turn it down and be like, hey, I don't have the time to do this. But luckily he was like, hey, I can do some concept. I could do some, you know, the first 5 pages. And it was so surreal, man, really just to see, you know, these things that live in your head, these words that I put down just come to life in full color and interpreted through Mike in a way that felt very much like my own, but also his take on it, which was really great as a collaboration.
So there's a lot of environmentalist themes that run through the story. You know, like you said, it has a young adult protagonist. It actually has quite a few, right? Isn't it? It's like 4. 1 and 4, right? They're siblings,
yeah,
4 right?
Total. Yeah. 2 siblings, Laris and her brother Angel. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So there is there's a greater theme there to that as well. So we have an environmentalist theme, but since the characters of the story are so young, you're kind of suggesting that this is really the fight of the people who are coming up after us. I don't know how old you guys are, but I'm in my 40s now. So
me too.
Possibly.
Middle of mine. I'm in the middle of my 40s.
Right. And so possibly we're talking about my daughter's age, who's 13.
Yeah.
Has environmentalism always been big with you?
Yeah, with me, definitely, man. I you know, as a hip hop artist, I've always been a conscious hip hop artist. So, you know, for me, leaning towards the positive, but also things that are uplifting, you know? So I think, you know, Eric B and Rakim, you know, Tribe Called Quest, De La Soul, mm-hmm. Jungle Brothers, you know, people who are really authentically themselves, but also about community, about celebrating life and culture. That was always exciting to me, as opposed to, you know, hip hop always had a spectrum, but as opposed to the, more of the street stuff. And so being that I was always, you know, more on the, you know, fight the power, public enemy kind of side of the hip hop spectrum, when I started, because I worked with youth and because I'm an activist, I went to a conference called Connecting for Change, and it was an environmental conference about sustainability. And I was just blown away at how they were connecting, you know, some of the equity stuff, some of the, you know, the economics to the environment, and all that stuff really fit in correctly. It actually made me like excited and happy that, you know, it wasn't just like, hey, we got to fight just for us, right? Like a group, I use the analogy, like a group of sometimes in environmental realm, just be a group of folks like really angry in the corner, you know, trying to bring about awareness for their plight. But this seemed to connect a lot of the dots. And I know for me, it was about learning like things like the bees weren't going back to their hives and how important the bees are, you know? And so I wrote a song about, I am the bee, pollinate truth if you choose to see, pollinate the youth to truly be free, pollinate love, let's all agree, I am the bee. So that's the hook. And there's a whole verse about how bees are no longer going back to their hives. And so as a poet, I take that responsibility very serious. You know, when I heard about, hey, climate change is real, hey, that, you know, man-made climate change is happening, there's something that we could do about it, why not, you know, echo that? Why not amplify that message? And so when I started writing the story about these young people, it just naturally went that route. It just seemed like an important topic that that the youth could get some messages, even though it's not preachy. It's just, you know, this action adventure about young people who get powers from animals. But at the end of the day, as they're reading, they're like, oh, this makes sense. This is grounded in some reality, even though now this kid is flying or this girl's tapping into the strength of the lion or the dolphin. And so it's really a balance always. Yeah.
What about yourself, Michael? Has there been a big social conscious to a lot of your work? Or
I mean, I think whenever I create work for myself, especially, and whenever I have the choice to take on projects with other people, there's always a desire to tap into content that speaks to the world and making it a better place in general, you know, just to be kind of broad about it. So the idea is to always have purpose with the work that I'm creating and not just be, you know, superficially entertainment value or just commercial. So, you know, my previous work had a lot to do with sort of social justice type issues and, you know, representation and things like that. In terms of the environment, you know, I would not call myself an activist in the sense, but I do feel like I'm the type of person who has a deep respect for, you know, the earth and the, you know, our environment and animals and things like that. And I do take that very seriously in my understanding and also my quest to sort of get more knowledge about everything that's around us. You know, I think Tim and I share that we're constantly sort of learning about our world, you know, and keeping our minds open to the fact that, hey, animals have a lot more going on than we think that we're comfortable acknowledging, you know, and that maybe that we're going to keep discovering more things about our living world. And we sort of got to check ourselves as people who live in harmony with each other. And how does that look? So that, you know, that's a long-winded way of saying that I am devoted to creating work that speaks to people and at the very least begins a conversation about something. And also I'd hope that if people agree with some of the things we talk about, they feel sort of united and that they're not alone in those ways of thinking. And so, you know, that's always a goal of mine in my creative work.
Hey, Michael, how much do you really think that environment or environmentalism, and even just how people's connection to the natural world in general, how much do you think that really kind of impacts somebody's overall wellness?
I mean, I think you can't understate how important that is. I feel like, I think the way that we think about that can vary. So I think this sort of cliche thing of like, oh, walking in the woods and things like that, you know, but I think there's more simple ways of looking at how important connecting to the environment affects your life. So even just being outside and listening to the world and sort of being in tune with being aware that things are around you and happening, I think is actually a very profound way of being if you tap into that, if you allow yourself to really connect in that way. And allowing yourself to touch grass, you know, just on those, you know, be like actually the physicality of living on a planet. You know, we're so busy with life that I don't think we really tap into it. When you slow down and you let yourself just sort of try to be in the rhythm of the natural world, I think people will tend to report being more relaxed, you know, and more you know, centered and things like that. Because what you're essentially doing is you're essentially meditating, because you're focusing on the now, you're focusing on what the rhythm, the vibrations of the planet. And you're not letting everything else come in. You're essentially that mountain in the storm. You know, you're not letting everything else sort of affect you. And so I think it can't be understated. I think that it's been sort of, you know, I think it's sort of the way it's been sort of promoted or sort of branded of being connected to the planet is sort of people sort of shut themselves off to that because it sounds a little bit hokey. But I do believe deep down that it's so important and essential to living in general. You know, that everyone has to come to that in their own way and how that makes sense.
So, Tom, I'll ask you, since, you know, you did write the book, after all, it's like when you're talking about the issue of environmentalism, I feel like sometimes it's kind of an abstract notion to a lot of people. I mean, people can understand basic things like littering. You know, you walk outside, you see trash on the ground, you get that part of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're really talking about environmentalism, especially human wellness and how it all kind of ties in with one another, it's much bigger than just finding like a few cigarette butts on the ground.
Totally.
I feel like this is the kind of thing that doesn't really get much appreciation, especially, and I might be wrong about this, but especially maybe in like in hip hop circles where, you know, a lot of the stuff, the socially conscious stuff that you hear being spoken about is things that are immediately relatable to the people, to a lot of the people who are listening to it. Like if you're talking about gang violence, well, they get that.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. They get domestic violence, gang violence, you know, murder, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're talking about how, you know, evil, you know, type oil tycoon Xander is slowly killing you and the next, you know, umpteen generations of your family and everyone else's family. Well, you're kind of like going out of sight, out of mind there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, no, it's really interesting because, you know, for me, you know, I came up, during the golden age of hip hop, and to keep it real was always really important. Whereas now I think a lot of people are really dying to keep it fake. I think they're trying to look and sound like everybody else. And it's sad, you know, not everyone, right? I think there's this underground that still is alive, you know, and I think of even like Mos Def, who was part of, you know, Black Star, who had like New World Water was his song, you know, and the importance of water, right? And how is water is life. We know this. We know that we are, you know, 75%+ water in our bodies, never mind the world. And so there are and have always been artists that have talked about the connection to the environment, to the earth. You know, I always think about, you know, the native tongue folks like De La and Tribe and, you know, Jungle Brothers, who, you know, always felt really, really grounded. But more importantly, for me, it's always about you know, not wanting to make a song or put out a book that looks like anything else. Like there, someone already did that. You know, I'm how I operate, and you know, not always, but most times, it's trying to, you know, I see you, I see me, right? I see you succeed. I'm rooting for you because you're a reflection of me. That's how I see it. And so when I see somebody who already did a book, already did a song, it's like, why add to the noise? It's just like, hey, no one is talking or writing or telling this story. And that's what I really feel, you know, it's not something special, right? It's just being able to ground yourself, to listen, right? To really get to a place where you can say, hey, like, what is the story trying to say? You know, it's not like what's trending on Twitter or what's trending on the book side. It's like, we weren't afraid to say, hey, this is where the story is leading us. This is what feels like the story is trying to tell us, and to kind of almost like plug in and be an instrument. That's how I feel about the story, and how I wrote it was just to plug into it and say, let the story tell itself and let it like wind around. There's a whole chapter where the young people go and like rescue some animals out of a zoo. And I mean, I think we all like zoos, right? We all like seeing animals. I think most people, I think, would like, you know, are fascinated by like, wow, that's a tiger. And how fascinating is it to actually see it up close? But at some point in your consciousness, you're like, well, this tiger is trapped. Like, this isn't the tiger's natural environment. It's not like we're in the jungle. And, you know, because then we would be looking out like this tiger might eat us, right? And so to know that, you know, for me in that story, like these young people went on this almost like a tangent, to be honest, but it became such a big part of the story where that's how they found the manpower, the animal power to actually take out this oil tycoon billionaire turned evil world conqueror. And I think that there's a lot of, there's a lot of people who, you know, see where we're at in society, right? And they see this immense wealth that some people are being able to generate, whether it's, you know, I won't even say any names, right? But we all know these people that are billionaires. And it's kind of like, what are these people really helping, or are they making things worse, even though they're trying to help, right? The Bill Gates and the Elon Musks and the, you know, the Jeff Bezos, you know, like there seems to be at some point some philanthropy involved with them, but then it's like, well, are you really trying to help? You know? And so there's a point where I think a lot of people are getting to where it's like, we can't wait for anybody else to do this. Like, we got to do it ourselves, right? And so if you are whatever line of work you're in, you can be that person. I think you can, you know, speak about it, do something about it, be about it, you know, as far as connecting, like Mike was suggesting, you know, just grounding yourself to the earth. But also, I believe in petition. I've been calling my congressmen and senators the past month or so, because there's certain things that I'm like, you all need to, like, I voted for you all, right? So there's that aspect, right? Or just taking to the streets, or writing a book or a song, you know, or speaking to your kids about some of these topics that, as we know, the schools don't always talk about, right? For whatever reason, it might be a little too controversial, but hey, this is what I feel about it, but you can have an opinion too. And so this book and my music has always been me just saying, hey, I want to add to this culture. I want to add to the conversation. I don't know it all, right? I know enough to know that I know very little in the grand scheme of things. But hey, I can tell a story. I believe it's a good story that has entertainment value, and you know, it's grounded in a lot of research, so there's actually information there. So edutainment, if you will. At the end of the day, you will, you know, get ideally inspired, right? That's what we want. We want the young people and anybody who reads it to be like, wow, that is a breath of fresh air. It's something new. It's not superheroes with capes. Nothing wrong with that either, because I love me Batman and so forth. But it's cool to see everyday young youth be the superheroes.
So since you brought them up, you brought up Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. I'm going to ask you about those guys, because especially like someone like Elon Musk. Elon Musk is kind of like, I don't know, he's sort of jumping all over the place here. It's like he's redefining and rebuilding the electric car, which would bring down emissions, which would help save the planet. You know, I read a book on him, the book, Elon, written by Walter Isaacson, the big book on his story and his life. And this is something that he supposedly is very concerned about. And this is something he's devoted much of his life to. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, and then of course he's jumping into outer space and going into interplanetary exploration and stuff like that on the idea, the hypothesis that humanity has no choice but to become multi-planetary.
Yeah.
Because life on this planet apparently is going to expire at some point. Mm-hmm. And if the human race is going to survive, it has to go beyond planet Earth and set up settlements on planet Earth. It strikes me as kind of like a contradictory sort of way, two different directions you're taking here. You want to save the planet, but then you want to go multi-planet. It doesn't really seem like he has a firm priority here. I don't know. I just kind of wanted to get your guys' input on that. I guess, Michael, I'll start with you. Yeah.
I'm very cautious about listening to bazillionaires who probably don't have a lot of people that are pushing back on their ideas because they're, you know what I'm saying? I don't feel like we ever really get a window into the reality of those people's thoughts and lives. Yeah. And so I'm very cautious about anything I see them putting out because what's going on behind the scenes. You know, now we're seeing all this stuff in the Congo about the cobalt mines that mine all the stuff that goes into our phones and stuff. So you could make as well. He's making electric cars, but it's like, which I mean, I'm all for electric cars, but I'm saying like we don't know like how those things are made and all these. It could come, you know. There's sort of this face value of what's going on and how they're marketing themselves. And I've just seen enough negative things about Elon Musk that, you know, I'm very cautious about all of the stuff I hear about, you know, those kinds of things, because I think like sort of, you know, it's hard to wrap your mind around like leaving the planet, which just sounds like we're not there yet. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It seems like something else is going on there and it just doesn't sit right. And, you know, they're like, well, you know, it's a one-way trip to Mars if we're going there, you know, and they're like training people to get ready for this mission. And some of it just, I don't know. It's like what you're making a really good point here, Sean. It's like, why aren't we focusing on what's going on here? Mm-hmm. And if you've got all this money and all of this sort of power and influence, you know, we have the technology to change things on the planet. We have enough food that's being wasted. We know this. You know, we know all of this stuff. You know, and it's funny because like even in way back when Al Gore did that Incomplete Truth movie, he's like, we have the technology to fix the problems, we just aren't doing it, and it's because of rich people who are holding on to their self-interest. Right. You know, so I have very, you know, strong feelings when it comes to people who really hold the power to make things change around the world, and it always seems to benefit people in power.
Well, I think with Elon Musk, like, I think to some degree his heart is in the right place. I just think that he's maybe just diffusing too much of his energy in too many different directions here. Like what you just said here is like, why don't you take 100% of your concentration and work on actually making this planet better that we know can sustain our lives? And then once that's in order here, maybe then we'll talk about colonizing Mars or something like that. Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean,
who would benefit from colonizing Mars in the next 100 years?
I feel like that's kind of like a far off boyhood fantasy that he's holding on to. Yeah. That he's just kind of like, let's go out in outer space and explore outer space, which is a fine idea. But when you look like, we don't even really know what the bottom of our own oceans looks like, to be real. We got these oceans here that are like, it's pitch black at the bottom here. We've got some idea of what it looks like down there, but you know, every day they're finding something else. Like, what is that?
the new species.
Well, have we seen that before? You know.
Well, that was honestly part of the inspiration of these animals talking, right? As I think, you know, because I'm a sci-fi guy, so
yeah.
I believe I'll put it out there. I believe in aliens. I believe there's life in other planets, other dimensions. All that stuff is cool. But guess what? There's such an abundance of life right here on Earth, right? There's all these animals that we almost have given up. I feel like if we were to go to whatever planet, XLRON, and find something that looked, you know, like, yeah, let's say it just looked like a dog, we would probably spend the next, yeah, like our dogs, we'd probably spend the next, you know, 10, 30, whatever years trying to communicate with them. But we don't seem to be worried about communicating with the dolphins or the whales has been around, right, for the longest time, or any of these things. But we seem very cool with chopping them up and eating them, you know what I'm saying? Which is really sad, because I know that, you know, I'm not a pet owner besides my little hamster that my daughter has. But, you know, I love animals. I feel a connection to them. But most importantly is when I look at a dog or a cat or anything like a cow, any of these things, I feel like there's something looking back at me. You know, it's not like I'm looking at a rock or a tree, and the tree's alive too, as we know. So it's really, interesting to see that, you know, we have people willing to spend billions, if not more, to go to a whole other place, to try to, you know, recreate life there when there's so much life here already. And right, so why not spend that time, effort, and money to stabilize this, you know what I mean, and then go up? Because I like that idea. I'm a Trekkie guy. Mm. I'm a Star Wars guy. I'm like, let's go explore other planets, but let's take care of planet A first, you know what I mean?
Right.
There is no planet, there's no planet B right now, like, you know what I mean?
Right.
So This is the only one we got, and it's beautiful. You know, I don't know, right, if anybody has seen, if your audience has seen, Don't Look Up, right? It was a story with Leonardo DiCaprio, but it's about this asteroid that's coming down, and they make a good point in it about just like, we had it all. Like, we have it all right now, right here, right, mm-hmm, now. It's almost like you just got to appreciate what you have and take the time to actually fix, you know, do the minor tweaks in order to really have that, you know, as close to a utopia as you can get. I don't, you know, that nothing's ever going to be utopian. However, we can strive to that as opposed to abandoning this. Because once you say, it's kind of like any relationship, like, you know, you're in a relationship with, you know, your wife or whatever, your partner, and then you're like, I think I'm going to, you know, be looking over there. You know, it's like, why don't you take the time to work on this relationship here? Because that's going to send a lot more of a message, especially if you're a billionaire with all these resources. Like, let's get to work.
Right. Well, I mean, even still, though, you could argue, like, say, at least their heart is in somewhat the right place versus like someone who versus like maybe someone who is like just completely rapacious and is just out for complete control and complete power. I mean, I don't want to drop any names on that. I don't know if such a person even really does exist today. I don't know if our system or our current world even tolerates, at least in this country, these, you know, absolutely autocratic rulers who just want to accumulate power. You know, we're talking about maybe like the Henry Fords of the back in the day and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But you know, I mean, you could argue that at least their billions are being spent in somewhat of a, you know, a right and honorable way, right?
I think that it's a question of transparency too, because people who give, you know, it makes them look good too. So if people are very open about how they're spending their money on stuff, I mean, again, it's just a matter of like how much you're allowed into the reality of people's lives. You know, you can make the case that maybe this Elon Musk thing, what are the intentions of doing this? It could be that the public facing intention is to like get people to save the planet, but there could be, I mean, we just don't know why people do what they do, especially very powerful, wealthy people, you know? So I think, you know, I think that it depends on how much we buy into the story that's being told and what we actually know. I mean, I'd like to, I want to believe that people are doing stuff for genuine reasons, but there's got to be like a enough of a track record to see that that's what that person's doing. So I don't know. I'm a little pessimistic about this when it comes to that level. That's all.
Sure. That's totally fine. What about you, Tim?
Yeah. I mean, there's always room, you know, for dialogue. When by you asking that question, I think about like the food industry, right? Yeah. And how, you know, like we know what we should be eating, you know what I mean? We all know what we should be doing and eating, right? Unfortunately, we choose not to, right? We like, for whatever reason, the way these things taste, even though we don't necessarily like how they make us feel after, right? And so, the industry has created an industry where it's not necessarily like getting people good food. It's like getting people to buy this food that tastes good to them, you know, and we get their money. Seems to be what a lot of the food industry is about, which is sad, you know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, there is a lot of great food out there that could have, you know, healthy folks, but it's all interconnected. And unfortunately, like Mike was saying, it's like, you know, if we were to have the transparency and know that, hey, this isn't always the ultimate measure of success isn't the dollar sign. I think that's really what it comes down to, because in our book, we have, you know, I have Xander, and he's just a bad dude. Like, he's just straight up out. Just, I wanted it to be clear, just like when you saw Star Wars, like Darth Vader, he's bad. Like, there's nothing good about this dude. You don't have to be conflicted. Well, eventually, you know, it got there, right? They told his backstory with Anakin and all that. Yeah, exactly. So eventually you will learn Xander's story, but in this, he's just a bad dude, right? And so when I was writing this story, I wanted that to be clear. These are the good guys, these are the bad guys. You don't have to feel bad for this dude when he gets taken out, type of deal. But to make the connection to what we're saying is, you know, my sons have been helping me. I have adult sons who's been helping me with this project. And I honestly always wanted them as an entrepreneur to see this journey. And I've always wanted to be an open book for everyone. And I always told them, we're making this book not to buy Lamborghinis and to have a mansion. You know what I mean? The point isn't it to get rich. Hey, Mike, I got a quick get rich, quick scheme of this book, right? Like, that's not the intention of this story. Yeah, it would be great, right, to have abundance, right, to have that money, because then you could give back, and that's awesome. But at the forefront of all this is for these young people to see themselves as superheroes that maybe they're not seeing themselves in other media, right? And to see themselves as being able to rise to the occasion, you know? And I think that's really important. And through that transparency of saying, hey, here's the story, here's some, you know, flaws in these characters that they can transform and become better. They may have this weakness or this fear, but at the end of the day, they're working through it, is I think a greater message for anyone. It's just like keep going, you know what I mean? You're here again today. We're breathing, right? Let's go and let's make the world better. Like, do our part. You don't got to do it all, right? We don't have to go out there and be the next Elon Musk, but you can be a great Mike LaRicci. You could be a great Sean, a great 10 Blessed, and just do our part. And I say it all the time, like, and Mike, I think this is why we connected. Like, if we can just raise a kid who loves themselves and loves, like, has compassion for other human beings, then we won. I think we did our job, and that's the plan and part of what Planeta Blue is about.
Yeah, I think you raised a good point there. You mentioned about the food. Like, yeah, we know. I mean, it's impossible to know not to know what is the better things to eat these days. I mean, now when you get down to the actual nooks and crannies and nuances of nutrition, okay, that takes a little bit more study and a little bit more expertise. But in general, you know full well that banana is better for you than that bag of Doritos. You know that. So, we know that these things are – we know that what's better for us and what's not good for us. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it, at least in terms of food, but it's still at the same time, McDonald's ain't going bankrupt.
But no. John, do you think that there's like I'm just thinking of this. Do you think this is sort of an unconscious understanding that in your mind that you're sort of that's drilled into that says, well, if it's being sold in a grocery store, it's something that I can eat that's not necessarily bad for me. You know what I'm saying? Like there's sort of this understanding of like, well, if it's in the store, then it's edible. You know what I'm saying? Even though if we really look at this stuff, you know, you'd be looking at the Doritos, you'd be like, well, what is this? Like, what, it's this hyper processed thing. But we sort of just think, well, because the grocery store's selling it, I can eat this.
Well, I think, I think to some degree, I think that, we figure that it's in the grocery store, it's being sold for consumption.
Right.
At the very least, the FDA said this is not going to kill you on the spot. So this is not going to poison you and cause you to die at least right away. So we can justify that to ourselves and saying, okay, I can get that. And, you know, just so I don't sound like too much of a hard liner on this, I think a little bit of junk food is fine.
But like, I feel that way about like soda. Like I look at soda, I'm like, I can't consume this. It's like, I just won't do it. Now, I don't care. I'm not judgmental of other people that drink it, but I've gotten it programmed into mine. I was like, there's nothing beneficial about this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the quantities that are considered a portion to me, you know, I've just sort of reoriented how I think about it. But however, it's sold everywhere.
Right.
So you think, well, if everybody's drinking this, it can't be super bad.
Well, yeah, probably too. I think that's probably a part of it as well. It's like, it's there. It's obviously being sold to anyone who wants it. And no one has said, stop selling this. This is so bad for you that you really should not eat it. And so, yeah, we probably do to some degree tell that to ourselves. That's the story we play in our mind to justify buying something that we know is bad for us, but is maybe going to taste very good or is very convenient, you know, that gives us a good rush. But I want to jump back to the book here just for a little bit. Xander is interesting to me. You mentioned Star Wars, Tim. I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking about the Emperor when I saw the characterization of Xander, like someone who is just completely malevolent, like has no redeeming qualities at all. It's just constant power grab, and it's just like just. Yeah, in most villains, you can find something in them that's redeeming, right? You know, they have some sort of backstory, some tragedy in them that turned them into who they are, you know? And you can relate to that. Xander sounds like he's got nothing like that in his past. He is just like evil incarnate, right?
Yeah, at least in this book, right? This book, for those to know, for your audience to know, it's its own story. However, it's a series, so there's going to be other books, and so we'll get into that later. But he has a relationship with a couple of the main characters too, which, you know, not to spoil it too much, but there is a connection there. But yeah, he's just you know, about money and power. You know, I think that's what's really interesting, but also horrific about even, you know, trying to understand some of the people who are the powerful people in our world right now. You know, some people, even though they have money, they're still like, I want power, you know what I mean? Or vice versa. You know, some people who have a lot of influence, they still or have money, they want fame or whatever the case is. And so Xander's one of those people who, you know, has made a deal. And, I won't give too much, but knowing because I wrote the character, like he made a deal with, you know, it's not the devil, but we will use that, you know, that analogy. He made a deal with the devil for a big piece of the pie. And he looks at some of these people like animals. You know, he looks at certain people as undesirables, as not contributing to productivity in the world, you know, and so he's out to just annihilate them. And so if you're not helping him and his cause, then you have no reason to be here. He has a different from Elon Musk. He feels like the world's overpopulated. So he's like, I'm going to get rid of all the people that don't need to be here. Almost like a Thanos, right? Like, let's get rid of, you know, a lot of people. Whereas Elon Musk is like, we need more people in order to do some of the things that we need to do, which is really interesting, which I'll be honest with you, just to see some redeeming part about Elon. I think of that. You know, I think about that when I drive around. I live in Massachusetts, all this land that's in little bitty Massachusetts, you know, and then people, we're being told that the world is overpopulated. I'm like, come on, man. I don't believe that. So getting back to Xander, he believes that, and he wants to get rid of these folks. And these young people are really trying to remind him of who he is, because at the end of the day, I think that's what we all need to be, reminded of, like, who are we? Like, at the ground floor, you know, when I hear, you know, some kid, I'm out and about, and I hear someone say daddy, right? I turn around instantly, even when I know my daughter's not there, my son's not there, I'm just looking. If there's a child in need, I'm going to help out that child. I think most people are orientated that way. Xander wouldn't. He'd be like, that's not my kid. You know what I'm saying? Like, one less kid to worry about, right? And I think there is a fraction of people who need to be reminded that, like, you are that person, right? I think we all battle with, you know, our good and evil sides, right? Our greedy side, our generous side, right? There's all these dualities within us. And so in this book, I wanted, you know, Xander just to be like, he is the villain. Like, we got to take him out. And it takes this people power, but also animal power in order to you know, really put up a force in order to, you know, really not to give away the story. Right. But I'll say it like this, because I think we're living in a time where we need stories that are inspiring. Right. And so this isn't a tragedy. Right. This story is as terrible as the beginning starts. There's beautiful colors. Mike's you know, genius. He was able to infuse these colors into the story that could have been dark. It could have been a dark story if you frame it in a different way. But there's always this idea of hope. So no matter how grim things get, whether it's climate change, whether it's wars, whether it's famine, whether it's poverty, it's like, we can do something about it. We still can. You know what I mean? We still can. But it takes us to say, like, oh, how do we unite with people maybe that we didn't see as allies? Like, these young people are uniting with bears, you know what I mean? And dolphins, which they never thought, you know, they never knew this whole world existed. And, you know, for me, getting back to the whole sustainability piece, I didn't know there were these people that cared as a lot about equity as I did, but from this point of view. So it's just like, how do you find these allies in order to really change the world? And not in a way where you give up on the world like Xander did, which was just like, let me get rid of half of these people because they ain't really doing anything anyway. And that's sad, because as we know, everything, you know, like the, you know, like the moss and even the flies, you know, those grimy flies, they're doing something in the environment, decomposing things and such. So, yeah, so that's what we wanted to remind people of in the story.
So, Michael, when you were doing the illustrations for the book here too, like, how was the process for you? And going through that, like, conceptually, was it, did you guys have kind of like a tug and pull kind of relationship here? It was like, that's kind of what I was going for, but not really. I was looking more for this because, you know, I just know that, like, between creators, there can be kind of like a give and take a little bit. And I've experienced this too. It's like, so, well, that's not quite what I had in mind. Can we do blah, 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 blah? And sometimes it takes a while, and sometimes it causes friction or something like that, you know?
We've had a really good, we're good friends now, you know, but it started off just like that. I feel like we worked very well together in the beginning. I did concept work in the beginning in order to sort of nail down the style of the book. So, that was the way to, so that we wouldn't get into a situation where, you know, I had done all this work and then we change it. So, There was a period of, I was doing, you know, drawing all the characters to say, okay, let's nail down what they're going to look like. What's the style? And then we had a conversation about, you know, how would the animals be depicted? And we were sort of on the same page. We wanted it to be, we wanted people to take it seriously and not be distracted by the fact that there's talking animals, you know, and I'm always talking about, we don't want the Disney effect where there's, we're going to expect they're going to break out in song and start doing something. So the idea was, let's ground the characters in some sort of realism, not like a hyper realism where I think you can sort of shoot yourself in the foot if you get too realistic, because you want your viewer to buy into this world that you're creating. So it has to be enough that it makes sense and it adds to the storytelling. So the, you know, the style that I was comfortable working with was, it's realistic, but it has a lot of gesture to it at the same time. So it allows for the viewer to kind of like move in and out of the scenes and allows me to give some more emotion to what's going on in the story. So, you know, and Tim was right on board with that too, because I did a couple of, like we said, we did about like 5 pages or so of the beginning of the book, just to say, this is like sort of a pitch. This is what it would look like if it was finished. And that seemed to really fit with the message we were trying to get across, so that it took the content seriously, but it still gave us some wiggle room to add humor and to add sort of all these different dynamics that would still make it a really engaging visual story to witness.
So how long did it take you to get it all like completed? I mean, you started working on it. How long did it take? He had 100 pages of material to work with here.
Yeah, so we actually did this book during the pandemic. It was right when quarantine started. So it took me about a full year, I believe, to do. It's 250 page plus, I think. And it was a hustle. I mean, it was difficult because everybody knows during the quarantine, and I had 2 young kids running around me the whole time, and they were going to school at the same time. But it was a very exciting time too, because we were meeting multiple times a week and going through the book. And at that point, we had done a successful Kickstarter, so we knew that the book was funded. And so we had an objective to get this thing done by a certain time so that we could get it to the people who pledged to it. So it was about a full year. And then, the whole process was a year and a half, maybe, Tim. I can't remember how it all went.
Yeah, year and a half sounds right.
Stuff, you know, because it was all pandemic stuff, you know.
So when you pitched it to Dark Horse Publishing, what was their response to it?
So I had a relationship with an editor there for a long time. I had been sort of keeping in touch. And so I was in the habit of sending him stuff from time to time. And I was pleased with how sort of we sent him a finished book, basically. And from the beginning, he showed like a lot of interest. And I was very, again, cautiously optimistic. I didn't want to like be like, oh, this is happening. But, you know, he kept, I remember telling Tim, be like, this seems like this is going in the direction we want it to go. And it was a really great experience. Like that whole process, they've been very supportive, easy to work with. And I feel like all those years of being in touch and having that communication going made it an open door to like submit and finally have like a real finished, solid, you know, we had done the crowdfunding thing and it was successful. It was all the right things lining up, you know, and it worked out.
So now it's a finished product. So I know that, like we said, Tim's on the road right now. Yeah. It looks like he's talking to us at a bookstore right now. I see there's people walking behind him. You know, there's all this there's all this ambient noise in the background, like chairs being moved and stuff like that. So it looks like a bookstore or a coffee shop or both. So I know that you're putting the foot traffic in right now. Yes. How's that been?
It's been great, man. I mean, it's this journey, you know, it's so cliche, right? Like it's not a destination, it's a journey, but that's real. That's life, right? And so for us, to get out, to have the book launch, to have, you know, the book signing, you know, next week and others coming up,
nice.
It feels really good to get out there in the public. You know, the book lends itself to go into schools. So we have, you know, schools and classes ordering books and us doing assemblies. We have done it in the past, and now we're going to do One now coming up in the Bronx in a couple of weeks to with this book. And so it feels really good to have young people, one, reflect on how like that looks like me, or, you know, them looking at these pictures and initially just grabbing it and devouring it, you know, just going through, seeing the excitement, because you know, kids are like that, right? They don't, they're not trying to spare your feelings. You know, I have a 13-year-old who, you know, has told me to my face, you know, songs he doesn't like and how Drake is the greatest. And I'm just like, Rakim's the greatest, buddy. You know, and we get into and, you know, during the pandemic, I was like, you got to read this book. I want to get your honest opinion. And, you know, he was like fighting me because like most kids, it's like, ah. But then, you know, I didn't hear from him, you know, the last little bit, and he came back and I was like, so what'd you think? You know, he was like, actually it was really good. And I was just like, okay, actually it was really good. He's like, I could see this as a movie. I was like, let's go, you know. And I get
excited,
you know, because because there's one thing when you have, you know, certain people that we know that will always like support you, go get them, you know, even when it's not great. But there's some people that they're going to be straight shooters, and Rasta, my son, my youngest one, he's a straight shooter. And so for have him get excited, and then other youth and other, not just youth, you know, adults be excited about it, having people tag us on social media saying like, hey, I just bought this, my daughter just read it, I can't wait to read it, or whatever the case is, I bought it as a gift. It just feels really good, right? It feels really like we've not only arrived, but it's moving. There's this momentum that's picking up, and that always feels good. You know, as an artist, it feels good that it's landing with the audience.
Yeah, it's encouraging that you say that schools are picking up on it. I mean, we're in an era now where we're hearing stories about book bannings in schools, in Florida, in even, I think here in Iowa, like our governor is like, or at least colluding with some organizations that are flagging certain books for banishment to young people, like saying, oh, we don't want this in the school libraries, stuff like
that. Those become the most popular books.
Right, and end up becoming the most popular books. Actually, yeah, because now we see the proliferation of these shirts of like saying, I read banned books or something like that. Or no, we got these better things around town. They're like little book houses that offer like free, and saying like banned books houses or something like that. So it's kind of like it's becoming a big FU to our governor, to these people. But yeah, I'm really glad to hear that it's being picked up on. It's being encouraged to be read by young people in an era where we're seeing books being banned. I guess the next thing we'll see is books being burned in the middle of roads and stuff like that. So, I mean, the next natural step, right? So the fact,
Fahrenheit 451, right? It's like,
yeah, Rick, exactly. Yeah. Bradbury nailed it.
Yeah.
So, but that's all awesome news. This is great stuff. So we've come out on an hour now. We have a closing tradition on this podcast, okay, where the guests, as is the case now, has the final word. To the audience. So, you know, we talked for an hour now, we've covered a lot of material, so we want to give people listening one thing to remember if they can remember nothing else. So now, since there's two of you, I'll just ask you one at a time here. So Michael, let's start with you. One thing and one thing to remember.
I'd say be patient with your dreams and stick with them. Yeah,
there you go.
Simple.
Yeah, and I'll say just, you know, believe in yourself, dream big, because we need these dreams to become reality. Because right now, at times, the world feels like a nightmare. And so we need people to dream. Whatever your book that you've been waiting on, write it, you know, whatever that illustration. If you need to get to the gym, get to the gym, eat well, go to sleep. Mike likes to sign drink water on his book. So it's just,
oh, that's nice. Awesome.
Just do it. You know, not to, you know, give anyone credit, but we know what that means. It's just ain't none to it but to do it. So let's get busy, y'all. Pick up the book.
Right. And on that note here, where can people get the book?
right now everywhere, y'all. You can get it at planetablue.com, right? That's our website. But you can go to Penguin Random House. You can go to Barnes & Noble. You can go to Target. You could go to Walmart. You can get it. Yeah, you can get
it. He's got the merch right there.
Planetablue. There's even sweatsuits on the website.
Yeah, type in the name and a lot will come up. So,
gotcha. All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time here. This has been a very, very good conversation. I like the book. I like what you guys are doing. I like the fact that you've collaborated as long as you have. And those of you listening, again, going back to wellness and how you get any gains of any kind, you know, Tim told you, like, this idea started as a bedtime story to his kids. And he had it in his head, rattling around in his head for 5 years. It just grew from there. And then he teamed up with Michael. And Michael spent, they both spent a year and a half putting this all together. So we're talking closing on a decade of work here to get just to where they are now. All right. So you start small, but you keep moving.
Yep. That's it.
Absolutely.
Start small, keep moving, and don't lose the hope and don't lose the faith. Thank you so much. Tim Blessed, Michael Ariccia. From the graphic novel Planeta Blue, Rise of a Goo. Thank you so much, guys. And thank you to everyone who has listened. Thank you to everyone who ever will listen. This is Fitness Reborn. Until next time, train hard as always. Peace out. Take care, everybody.
Peace.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us. I hope you walk away with something useful from the episode. Don't forget that you can subscribe to my publishing platform called Samo Libs. It's the same platform I upload all my episodes, and I write my articles and my blogs and wherever else comes to mind I think is worth sharing with the world. The link is featured at the bottom of the show notes of every episode. By subscribing, you are becoming one of the very first that gets alerted whenever a new episode or a new blog or a new contribution piece becomes available on the platform. You can also follow the show, Fitness Reborn with Sean, by clicking the follow button on either Apple or Spotify or whatever your preferred streaming platform happens to be. I want you to know that your listenership, your viewership, and your continued support and your well-being mean the very world to me. Thank you so much. I hope to see you next time. Take care.